The Easter Bunny turned the world away from fried goats to fried chicken.
Yes, so that he could hide his eggs.
You could put glue on your Ruffles and smooth them out, and then just do regular chips. Yo, 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 what's up, everyone? Welcome to the episode 6 of the Applesauce Podcast. My name is Mike.
My name's Aaron.
And if this is your first time listening to the Applesauce Podcast, then you are in for a treat. And if you've been here before, then we are honored to have you back. Now, whether this is your 6th episode or your first, please take a moment to rate and review us. And don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Lastly, share this podcast with your friends and family. Now, you can reach us at theapplesaucepod@gmail.com.
theapplesaucepod@gmail.com.
We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/theapplesaucepod. On today's episode, Aaron and I are going to answer life's unanswerable questions. So are you ready, Aaron?
Yeah.
All right, let's get started with probably the most famous of all, which is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Before you answer this, I think it's a pretty obvious answer. I don't know why it's such a hard question. And I feel like you probably have a pretty, you probably have your answer right as well, Aaron, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So on the count of three, I'm just going 1, 2, 3, and you're going to say chicken or egg. And I think we'll both be the same page here, but just to be sure. So 1, 2, 3,
egg.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty obvious. It's the egg.
Yeah.
You want to start why or should I?
Well, my reasoning for why is it doesn't specify chicken egg, in my opinion. So I believe that eggs for other species came in before chickens were there, so the egg is first.
And that's a fair point. I think if you look at it that way, yes, the egg, because there were dinosaurs that laid eggs. Dinosaurs, I think fish lay eggs. There were fish around during the dinosaur era. I think chickens are considered to be descendants of dinosaurs, but today's chicken was not around during the dinosaur era. Therefore, if you look at it that way, an egg was around before a chicken was. But if you want to look at it and say, was the chicken first or the chicken egg first, I still think the answer is egg. And it's simple for the fact that the way you create new breeds of animals is two different species crossbreed and create a new animal. And so it took at some point in time two types of birds to breed to form today's chicken. And it was that crossbreeding that created the egg that hatched the chicken that we have today. So the egg always came first. The third view of it would be is if it was a race, a chicken and egg race, the chicken's going to win because the egg, unless it's downhill, the egg's not going to go anywhere. So in that case, that would be the only instance where I think the chicken would come first.
Well, now if it's a downhill race, though, the egg would have enough momentum to surpass the chicken and win the race.
So the egg, so in a foot race, there's still a chance the egg could win. I think the probability is more like maybe 5 to 8% of the egg winning, but then again, in the tortoise and the hare,
50 to 80%.
Well, in the tortoise, the hare probably had a 90% chance of winning, and yet the tortoise won. So there's no guarantee the chicken would beat the egg in a foot race either. Although, is it really a foot race if it's an egg involved? It would just be a race to the finish, wouldn't it?
Essentially.
Yeah. Okay. But there you have it. So if next time someone asks you what came first, the chicken or the egg, it's got to be the egg, right?
Well, you could also go on the religious standpoint. In some way, you could believe that the egg wasn't created until the chicken was created, and from the chicken came the egg. You could argue that.
Yeah, but it doesn't say in the Bible. So I look at it that way. In the Bible, I don't think chickens were around during the biblical times, because if they were, why were they eating goats? They should have been eating chickens. There's no mention of fried chicken in the Bible, right?
Well, they didn't have fryers.
They had oil, and they had fire. They could have deep fried a chicken. I mean, look, if you've ever had fried chicken, you know how good it is, and you would talk about it. And if they had fried chicken in the biblical times, it would be in the Bible.
Have you ever had deep fried goat, though? That's the question.
I have not, which makes lead me to believe that it's not as good as fried chicken.
But deep fried goat may be better than fried chicken, and who knows?
If it was, then you would have a Kentucky Fried Goat and Popeye's fried goats in all these restaurants that sell fried goats.
But that's not as catchy, and it's more expensive than chicken.
But is it?
Yeah, because goats are more expensive.
But in that case, then, goats don't lay eggs, so it wouldn't be what came first, the goat or the egg. It'd just be the goat.
Yeah.
And you'd be going, why did the goat cross the road?
He didn't. He was arrested.
No, it's chickens. Chickens are not allowed to cross the road.
But in this scenario, it'd be goats instead of chickens.
You think so? It would change the whole, our whole lives if goats became today's chickens.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they didn't, because I don't think goats taste as good as chicken. I'm just saying. All right. Next question. If a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, does it make a sound?
That depends on whether you think we're living in a simulation or not.
I'm just saying, let's say right now, we're here and out there in some forest somewhere. Let's say the rainforest of Brazil, where there's no one around, a tree falls.
Are we saying no person is around, or there's just nothing?
There's nothing around, and the tree falls. Does it make a sound?
There's no way to know.
I think there is. I think to me, the answer is, does it make a sound? No. Does it make a noise? I'm sorry, does it make a sound? Yes. Does it make a noise? No. And that's because sound is there's sound waves. So sound waves are created when the tree falls, whether anybody hears or not. But noise is something that has to be heard by an ear. So if there's nothing to hear it, there is no noise. However, just because no one hears it, there's still sound. There's still sound waves being emitted from it. So I think it makes a sound, yes. A noise, no.
So are you trying to say, so for a noise to be created, not a sound, you need a transmitter and a receiver, such as the tree and ear?
Exactly. Yeah. So the noise, in order to have a noise, you have to have sound waves. But you don't need sound waves. You don't need a noise in order to have sound. Sound waves are part of the noise. That's the transmitter, like you said. And then you have the receiver, which is the ear of something or some way to receive it. Because noise, I think, is an audible thing.
So with sound. Sound waves are different than sound itself.
But sound is sound waves, though.
Sound is made up of sound waves. I believe sound waves create sound. They aren't sound.
Sound could also be like a body of water, like a sound, where they have a...
What?
Was it the Puget Sound up in Seattle? It's a sound. I don't know why it's called a sound, and it's the shape, it's like a inlet of water.
Maybe it makes a lot of noise.
It is kind of noisy when the waves are crashing, probably.
That's probably why it's called a sound.
If there's no one there, there's no noise. If no one hears it. There's still sound, but there is no noise.
True. I guess.
So, does the tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, does it make a sound? Yes. I say yes.
I say, I don't know.
Okay, well, you're wrong. It's yes. So you know that now. All right, next question. What happens when you turn on a flashlight while traveling at the speed of light?
Then, depends on which way the flashlight's facing. If it's facing forward, it'd be turned on, it's just... nothing would be happening. Well, first of all, the question is, why are you traveling at the speed of light? If you're traveling at the speed of light, you are time traveling.
Well, I think that's irrelevant. So you're time traveling, whatever. You're at the speed of light and you turn a flashlight on.
Why would your biggest concern if you're traveling at the speed of light be turning on a flashlight?
Okay, so you flip the light switch on.
Why would that still be your biggest concern if you're traveling at the speed of light?
Because you need to... my thing would be the flashlight would be more like you turn the headlights on. Whatever vehicle you're in, you turn the headlights on because you can't see. It's dark. So you turn the headlights on. Are you able to see?
If you're in your car traveling at the speed of light, you don't need to worry about turning your headlights on.
Maybe you're in an airplane or a rocket ship of some sort.
You still don't need to worry about turning headlights on a rocket ship.
Well, you want to make sure the other vehicles around you can see you also.
If you're in a rocket ship traveling at the speed of light, I don't think anybody cares if they can see you.
I'm just saying, if you were to turn your headlights on while traveling in a rocket ship at the speed of light, what would happen? And my theory is that the light would not project forward, but it'd show up behind you.
No, because the light wouldn't show up at all. Because the light would be blocked by the thing that's transmitting the light. So it would be pushed back, but it just wouldn't show up behind you because the thing creates a shadow.
But see, I look at it as there would be a light for an instant. The light is there. The light exists at the front of the vehicle where the headlight is, because the headlight is also traveling. So there is a light there. It's just not moving forward. But someone watching would see a trail of light.
Probably because you're traveling at the speed of light.
Yeah, but if your headlights weren't on, they wouldn't see the trail of light. But because your headlights on, they see the trail of light. So there would be that light would be, for the observer outside, that light would be behind you at all times. It would never be in front of you.
Technically, though, it's like saying, what if you turned on the sun, but there was a big, giant, circular blocker in front of the sun. So the sun would be transmitting forward, but not back towards you because there's a big blocker. Like, if you turn on a flashlight, the light doesn't go behind the flashlight. That's because the light is projected forward. So you're trying to say that only because you're traveling at the speed of light, suddenly it would defy all laws of physics.
No. It's not going behind you. It's not going behind you. But because that flashlight is moving, someone is seeing that light at whatever interval rates that they're seeing it. So they're seeing the light here, 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 you know.
No, but
so that light is
still
there. They
wouldn't be able to see the light because the light doesn't have time to travel before it's pushed against the inside of the flashlight.
It's just open, so there's just a light on the inside of the flashlight. There's just that flashlight.
Yeah, but there's no way for the light to get behind the flashlight because the flashlight is essentially pushing the light along.
But it would be like if, trying to give an example, if you've ever seen, this is tough to explain. I can picture it in my head where there's an object that's moving and that object becomes blurred because they're moving so fast. The object's blurred, but you still see the tail of the object. Even though the object should be pushing itself forward, you're still seeing that image, that tailing image that's kind of fading away behind it. Like you would take like the flash. The flash is running. You still see that blurred image behind him, even though...
That's not real. This is all to make it look like he's going fast. None of this is actually real. It wouldn't actually do that.
I don't know. You know it wouldn't do that. This is what we're talking about. I think it would.
I think it would be dead.
A trailing image of that flashlight just being, there's just that lit front of the flashlight would all be lit. There would be no light anywhere else, but you see that one little glow spot. But because it's moving, you see that trailing image along, and there'd be like a little tail of light following that flashlight as it travels the speed of light. Now, how long that tail is, I don't know. But it would obviously be an observable, a noticeable tail of light behind
there. It's like, if there's a small person in front of me, right? And I'm running, and I'm pushing the small person along, the small person wouldn't be behind me because I'm pushing it forward.
Like in a shopping cart?
Sure.
But the person would be behind you, but the image, the trailing image would be of you and the cart and the little kid in there, repeated over and over again, so there'd still be a fading, and the further away from you I got, the less defined that image would be, but it'd still be there. So it would still be there, because I would see you here, and you here, and you here, and you here, and it would still be there.
Well, that's because of how your brain works. Your brain takes, your brain's like a video camera. Click, 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 click. Wait, no. Yeah, no, your brain just, yeah, that's what your brain does.
Kind of does. It takes those images repeatedly. So that's what it's doing. It's taking those repeated images and seeing that little bit of light, and then it's creating a tail behind it.
No, it just see you and then not see you is all it would see. It wouldn't see any light.
Okay, I think it would see the light.
No.
It would just be the furthest flashlight lit up, but it would see it, but because it's moving, I think you're wrong, but it's okay. It's okay to be wrong.
You're wrong.
All right. Next question. How much is too much?
Depends on what it is.
What would you like it to be? Let's talk money. How much money is too much money?
Too much money would be the point where the entire economy crashes.
How much ice cream is too much ice cream?
There is no too much ice cream.
How much chocolate is too much chocolate?
There is no too much chocolate.
I think there is. Unless it's white chocolate, maybe, but milk chocolate, dark chocolate, yeah, more than a few bites is too much.
Unless there's almonds in it, then there is no too much chocolate.
Almonds are good.
Not in chocolate.
Yeah, I think you're right. How much is too much? It really depends on what it is. I think for food, it's at a point to... The point you get sick would be too much, I guess.
Unless it's chocolate.
Well, chocolate still make you sick if you eat too much of it.
But that's not too much, though. You just keep shoveling chocolate in.
Or maybe the point you die, it becomes too much, then.
You'll eat chocolate in heaven.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you travel at the speed of light in heaven?
Oh my gosh.
What happens if you open a chocolate bar while traveling at the speed of light? Does it melt?
But there's...
That's another question.
The friction created by the air would probably burn you and melt you.
Can you swallow if you eat at the ultra speed of light? Are you able to swallow?
Yes, because it uses your muscles. It doesn't actually use like gravity or anything to swallow.
Okay. Unless you're what, a flamingo? Wasn't the flamingo that you ate upside down or something from the last episode we talked or two episodes ago? Yeah, I'm having flashbacks to previous episodes. Alright. Next question. Is the glass half full or half empty?
From my perspective, it's just water. Drink it.
I look at it as no matter what it is, it's always full. It may not be full of liquid, but it's full of liquid, half full of liquid, half full of air. The glass is always full of something. There's never, unless you're in a vacuum, there's never a completely empty glass.
Now, I'm going to go a scientific perspective of this. So water and the glass are all made of, and even the air, are all made of atoms, molecules, right? Atoms are 99.9% empty space. Therefore, the entire thing is 99.9% empty space. So it is more than half empty.
But even though an atom is empty space, an atom still occupies a space.
So it occupies some space.
It's like if I were to put a balloon into the glass and blow the balloon, even though it's full of air, it's still considered a full glass because you could no longer add any more liquid to it.
Why would you be blowing up a balloon in a glass of water?
Well, I didn't say I just had a glass.
Then why would you be blowing up a balloon in a glass?
Just to prove my point here.
What? Well, and then you could also go the route of it is technically entirely full because it's got molecules of air such as nitrogen, oxygen, carbon dioxide in the parts that there is no water. You could also go that.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that it's full of something, whether it's liquid or air. There's always, like I said, unless you're in a vacuum, the glass is never empty.
What if it actually was full, half empty? What if that was just a vacuum there?
What if the bottom half was empty, the top half was full? That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. You need to read the book What If. They did a whole segment on this. It was great.
But could we create a vacuum at the, like, fill a glass of water and then suck out the bottom half of the water and create a vacuum there and leave the top half?
If you did that, the water, essentially, it would shoot the entire glass upwards. Glass would be everywhere. Everyone would die.
Okay, so let's not do that.
We can.
I don't want to try that. Everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll just trust that's going to happen. But I still think the glass is always full. It's never half full, half empty. It's always full of something. All right. Why is it said that an alarm clock is going off when it is really coming on?
Because English is weird.
But I mean, so you think, you always say, oh, your alarm's going off, when in reality, the alarm just came on.
It's not just alarms, though. It's a lot of things. Like, if someone gets mad at you, oh, he's going off on me, when really he's just mad.
And so he's getting, the madness is coming on, is beginning.
He's not getting going, on, not
you
going
think
off.
You think I'm turning the light off, the light's going off, the light's done with. But when someone's getting mad, they're going off, they're just beginning, they're not ending. So yeah. Same with this, is alarm clock going off is actually an alarm. Your alarm is coming on.
Yeah.
Now you can say, hey, your alarm is on. Yes. But most people say, hey, your alarm's going off.
Yeah. But however you said your alarm is off, that's something entirely different.
Yeah.
So the going part affects it because of our weird English language.
The word going completely changes that statement to say your alarm clock is off. Or your alarm clock is going off. Two completely opposite things.
Yep.
Maybe not opposites, but
they're almost opposites.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But yeah, so one means it's complete silence and you're sleeping. The other means it's or whatever kind of alarm you have. Yeah, I don't know. All right, next question. Can you cry underwater?
Yes, because I believe your tears are made up of a different composition of substances than the water that you're most likely in.
What if you're in salt water?
You still have probably a different salt content in your tears.
But then,
I've tested my tears, I know.
I mean, I would say yes if you're wearing goggles. You can cry in your goggles.
No, you can still cry, it's just you can't feel it as well.
But I was thinking when you go underwater, that water puts a pressure on your body. Is that pressure going to suppress your tears? And it's too much pressure because tears don't have a lot of pressure. They're not, like, when you cry, your water doesn't shoot out of your eyes. It just dribbles out of your eyes.
Yeah, okay.
So the water pressure, at what depth of water do you have to be under before the pressure is enough to suppress your tears, not let your tear ducts open and release the water?
Jump into a pool. I'll make you cry. One moment.
Well, I don't have a pool here.
We can go to a pool, jump in, and I'll make you cry, see if it works.
How are you going to make me cry?
You have no idea.
No, I don't. I'm not sure. What are you going to fill that glass of water with the vacuum and blow it up at me or something? Yeah. I don't know. I would say, yes, you can cry underwater if you have goggles on. Without goggles, no, you can't cry. Because even if you were crying, no one would believe you because you can't prove it.
Yeah, sure. But I say you can cry underwater no matter what. Just believe in yourself and you can cry.
if you're believing in yourself and you're crying, then it's a really sad outlook you have on yourself. And I believe in myself. Yeah, you have issues. Then you need to see a therapist. Okay. Next question. Why doesn't glue stick to the inside of the bottle?
Because, okay, I know how glue works. So glue, it kind of acts as when you put two things together, they're almost like ridges, right? And the ridges don't fit. But what glue does is it gets in between the ridges or the cracks. And then when you put them together, it makes them fit. And so I believe the material glue bottles is made out of is the fact that doesn't have ridges like everything else does. Either that or glue only dries when it's exposed to oxygen.
I think the exposure to the air is the because I don't think the glue bottle is completely smooth inside. Everything has ridges on it when you get to a microscopic level. Oh. Plus, inside the bottle, what's going to stick to it? It's not just the glue. There needs something else to stick, you know?
Like, you know when you use soap, though, and then you leave it down, and then it dries, and it's stuck? It might do that sort of thing.
I know glue over time. The glue in a bottle like will sometimes harden up and go back.
Like a glue stick, but that's after it's exposed.
Yeah, once you open it, you have a limited time to use it. Not even a glue stick, but even like the liquid glue.
Yeah.
If you use it, like I think of like little tubes of crazy glue, you have a limited time, and after a while, they're no longer good because the outside opening starts to harden, and then it slowly works its way in, and eventually the whole thing just hardens up.
So I think the tangent I just went off on was completely
the ridges nonsense. Part was I don't think it's useless. People need to know that things have ridges and how glue works, but it doesn't apply to this
ruffles
situation.
Ruffles has ridges.
So if you could glue, if you could put glue on your ruffles and smooth them out, and they'd just be regular chips.
Yeah.
I wouldn't eat them though, but you could just use, there's edible glue though.
People eat glue anyway. In school.
I mean, kids, I can't say that I cannot honestly say I have never eaten glue because I believe there were times when I was a
kid.
Did
you know glue tastes like white? It just tastes like the color white.
Glue tastes like what does the color white taste like?
Glue.
Okay. I don't know how to respond to that.
But
I didn't know colors had flavors.
The only way to describe the taste of glue is by saying white. It actually tastes like the representation of white.
Glue tastes like white.
Yes.
So what tastes like red?
Oh, I don't know. I've never tasted red before.
So speaking of colors, this is kind of off script here, but this is another question that I didn't add here, but I was thinking about earlier this week, is how would you describe the color blue to a blind person?
The only way that I can think of it is I don't think you can do it using words other than I think it's synesthesia or something like that, where when you connect certain ideas or things to colors. So, for instance, I read about a person with synesthesia. I think that's how you pronounce it. I really don't know. And a blind person. They were friends. And they said something like, the sky is the color of, like, Mozart's Fifth Symphony or something like that. And that helped the blind person understand. That's the only way that I can think to describe it.
See, I always thought of like you colors sometimes are tied to emotions, although that's like you think of the color red, you think of anger. This is how we kind of correlate it. But the color red doesn't always mean anger. And then I thought, a blind person, do they really have a concept of color? If color is a visual thing, and if a blind person, now if someone was able to see and then went blind, they could still understand colors. Or if someone was blind but had could see certain things. But if someone's completely blind, they see absolutely nothing but, I guess it's darkness. I don't know if you're blind what's there. Do they even understand color? Because to them, everything is a touch or a feel, the feeling, the touch of something. They're using their other senses, the smell, the taste. The sound, but they don't use the visual cues of what it looks like.
But still, color, kind of, when you look at color, it puts that effect of certain ideas come into your mind, things like that, which is why the idea of connecting a certain object with a certain color, putting that idea into your mind, is the best way that you can describe color.
I guess. I think, like, if someone's blind, you could have them touch something and say, this is hard, this is soft, you know, this is squishy. You can have them correlate the feel, what something feels like to what it is, but have someone touch something and go, hey, this is red.
Well, that's,
you know,
because...
and then say, well, red is anger, or red is Mozart's 8th symphony. You know, I don't know.
Well, that's just because you can't, it's hard to understand how someone can connect things, but
yeah,
with synesthesia, I think it, like, for instance, but in my case, when I think of the letter A, I think of red, or B, I think of blue. So I already connect certain.
So you know 26 things. Different colors? I don't know if I know 26 different colors.
No, I don't. I just, when I think of the letter A, I think of red. That's probably why red's my favorite color and A is my favorite letter, because my name I also think of as red.
So your name is Red?
Yes.
So we start calling you Aaron Red. Red's
no,
your nickname. Your
when someone writes
red.
Down my name, I'd rather them write it in red than blue, because that's already the idea implanted in my mind.
Red, I like red. Orange is my favorite color, but I like to write with black. I hate using blue ink. I'd rather use black or a pencil or something that gray. I don't like blue. I don't like red. I don't like green. I don't like colors to write with. I want black. It's just the way it is.
But black can be considered a color.
It is a color. But I'm just saying that's the color I want. I don't want...
Actually, black isn't a color. Black is the absence of color.
But it's still a color, though.
But when you see something and there is no color, it's perceived as black.
But it's still a color.
It's the absence of color.
Which makes it a color.
No.
All right, we're going in a circle here. All right, next question. Can you slam a revolving door?
You can, but it will just spin right back around.
Well, I mean, I've tried. Those things, most of those things are because of the way they seal to keep the air out, you know, to separate the outside and inside so that you don't have a draft. They seal really well that when you go to push one, they're pretty hard to push. So
yeah,
the slam one's going to be pretty difficult.
If you were to slam one with enough strength, you'd essentially create a vacuum, causing the glass inside to shatter. So I don't think you want to try.
But would you create a vacuum? Because they open up to the outside. There is
because
no vacuum to create.
They're airtight, though. So then if you shove it enough, the air wouldn't have time to flow in, and it'd just kind of shut. That was a weird noise, but it would just... shut, vacuum, and then glass shatter and such.
I mean, if you made the glass shatter, then I would consider that slamming. I don't know if that's humanly possible.
It probably isn't. But that's probably why they make them so hard to push.
I think they're so hard to push because, like I said, it had to do with the keeping the outside air out and the inside air in, so you don't have that draft. So they seal them up. That's why it's that rubber seal dragging against that outer wall, whether it's glass, what it is, to prevent the draft, you know, so you're not, you know, yep. You're not having cold air coming in the wintertime or hot air coming in the summertime to create a higher cost of heating or cooling your building. Anyway, I don't think it's possible to slam a revolving door. I'll have to try it next time I get to one, though, and see.
Don't. Vacuum, shattering glass, you will get your eye poked out.
I know, but that would be awesome, though. I have to make sure I videotape.
So you don't want to make a glass literally half empty because it will... kill everybody around you, but you don't care if you kill yourself trying to slam a revolving door.
You didn't say slam the revolving door would kill everyone around me.
The glass would shatter and fly everywhere. It would essentially be the same thing as making a glass half empty.
Yeah, but a lot of it shattering outside. It wouldn't all shatter inside.
It would shatter everywhere.
So I slam it and run really fast.
You're still not.
I slam it and then turn and run at the speed of light.
Then you got different problems.
All right. Next question. What happens if you look in a mirror in the dark while wearing night vision goggles?
Then you would see yourself.
Would you? Because the mirrors reflect light. It's dark. There is no light to reflect. So would you see a reflection? See, this makes me want to do this. I would love to get a pair of night vision goggles because I honestly don't know what would happen. I almost think you would not see any reflection.
I've got some. I can go get them. I'm just kidding. I don't have night vision goggles.
So I would think that you would see absolutely nothing, but that would be kind of freaky to look in a mirror and see absolutely nothing.
You're a vampire.
It'd be kind of freaky. I mean, it makes me wonder. I'm sure someone's done this before.
But wait, in those ghost shows, technically the night vision goggles, there is light in the dark. It's just very little of it. So you would see your reflection. All night vision goggles do is let you see the light. Because technically, if there is no light, how you see is reflection of light. So when you put on night vision goggles and you see stuff, that means there is light. Just very little of it.
So would you see like a faint outline of yourself then, or would you see a full feature of yourself?
You would see yourself how you would see other things in night vision.
You think so?
Yes.
I know night vision usually has that greenish tint. I don't know. I really, this may be an experiment we have to do down the road. If any of you have any night vision goggles, could you send it to us? Just reach out to us at theapplesaucepod@gmail.com. We can get in touch with you on how to get that to us. We just want to borrow them for a few days where we can do this test with the mirror and the darkness and see if we can see ourselves. All right, next question. Why does the Easter Bunny hide eggs?
Because he wants to. Let him be free.
But rabbits don't lay eggs, so where is he getting all these eggs from?
He's got a chicken farm. That's what he does. He's got a chicken farm.
So Easter Bunny is a chicken farmer every other day of the year, except for Easter, he goes out and hides eggs. Is that what you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, essentially. That's why you can get really good fried chicken from him, too. The Easter Bunny is...
He owns a fried chicken restaurant.
The Easter Bunny is Colonel Sanders.
Okay, no, I don't believe that at all.
Yes, he is. The Easter Bunny is Colonel Sanders. Colonel Sanders just dresses up in an Easter Bunny costume. Or the Easter Bunny dresses up in a Colonel Sanders costume. And then when he distributes his fried chicken, which he uses to get all the eggs. That's why he can buy so many chickens and put candy inside of the eggs and buy the gifts, because of the money he makes off of KFC.
So the Easter Bunny just uses KFC as a front to fund his Easter business.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that. Then I don't know why the Easter Bunny hides eggs. I'm sure there's a reason for it somewhere.
The Easter Bunny has KFC. That's why he hides eggs. He threw a dart at a dartboard one day and goes, aha, fried chicken. That's what everybody loves. I'll make money off of that and then hide eggs.
I tell you, everybody loves fried chicken. That's why he's not frying. That's not why he's not frying up goats, is he?
He's the reason that we're not frying goats anymore.
The Easter Bunny turned the world away from fried goats to fried chicken.
Yes, so that he could hide his eggs. That's why in Jesus' times there was fried goats, but as soon as he died and as soon as Easter was created, boom, fried chicken.
Okay. All right, I'm going to move on from there because I don't know where to go with that. All right. If someone only has one eye, how do you know when they are blinking and when they are winking?
They're always doing both.
But are they?
Yeah. Have you met a Cyclops before?
I have not, no.
Oh, well, they seem really suspicious when they blink. Because they, technically, when they wink, you'll never know. But they're technically always winking. Because winking is blinking with one eye. But blinking, technically, you could say that they're never blinking. Because blinking is winking with both eyes. But winking is blinking with one eye.
So you're saying you can't blink with one eye?
Yep, definitely.
See, I would think it depends on the purpose. So a blink and a wink are technically the same thing. It's just you think of a wink as one eye and a blink of two.
So if I were to look at you and just blink, blink twice, well, that was three times. But if I were to do that, you'd immediately assume I'm winking?
No, because you're blinking with your eyes.
Maybe they just spell out stuff in Morse code.
But I
that's how you tell they're winking.
I think of like animals, like a dog. I can think of dogs sometimes blink and their eyes blink at different rates. Occasionally, so every looks like a dog is winking at you. The dog's not winking. It's actually blinking. So I think it's the purpose of the fact. It's the purpose, the reason why that eye is closing as to whether it's a wink or a blink. Is it, are you intentionally closing it to convey a message or something to someone? That's a wink. If you're just closing it and reopen it to re-moisturize your eyes, that's a blink. So the blind person can blink and can wink. You just have to be able, it's just harder to decipher which one is which, I would think.
Blind person.
The one-eyed person.
Cyclops.
The Cyclops. Well, it could be a person with a pirate.
Technically.
It could be a pirate.
But technically, a Cyclops, the only difference between a Cyclops and a human is it has one eye. So I'm calling it a Cyclops. If I meet you and you have one eye, I'm calling you a Cyclops.
But what if someone has two eyes and one has been removed? So
them a Cyclops. They have one eye.
That would be rude.
I don't care. I'm calling them a Cyclops.
So does that mean everyone who wears an eye patch is a pirate?
No, they're just Cyclops.
So all pirates are Cyclops?
No, because not all pirates wear eye patches.
Everyone I've ever met wore an eye patch.
And maybe they wear eye patches for just fashion purposes. Maybe their eye still works under there. So if their eye still works under there, I would not call them Cyclops.
Actually, the pirates used to wear an eye patch, what I understand, is for fighting battles. If they were sword fighting and they jumped down below deck in a ship, they could flip their eye patch over. And their other eye, because it's always been in darkness, can now has better night vision. It doesn't have to adjust. So that's the reason they always wore a patch, was to be able to fight in above deck or below deck.
Would they be able to see themselves in a mirror?
Behind the eye patch, no.
But when they take their eye patch off in the dark, would they be able to see themselves in the mirror?
No, because they don't have night vision. They just are able to see a little better.
Technically, that would be night vision.
So you're saying we all have night vision, then once your eyes adjust to the dark?
Yes, actually. Because once your eyes adjust to the dark, you can see in the night.
Yeah, but their night vision goggles, you can see, makes you see better. Helps you, doesn't make you.
Yes, but
see
it doesn't
better.
Give you night vision. You have night vision either way.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on from that. And we're going to our last question, probably the most important question of this whole episode. If you sneeze and fart at the same time, does a vacuum form in your stomach?
Your belly button. That's the key to this question. Your belly button. That's what allows air to come in to remove the vacuum, so you don't explode.
It's a pressure relief valve, what you're saying.
Yes, that's the whole point of your belly button.
What if you have an Audi?
Well, then too bad for you. You better hope you don't fart and sneeze at the same time, or you're going to be in big trouble.
See, the first thing I have is, I don't think it's possible to fart and sneeze at the same time, because when you sneeze...
I'm going to try. One moment.
Don't do it here. Not in the studio. Do that when we're done. But when you sneeze, like, your eyes close, everything closes, seals up tight, and all the pressure comes out of your nose and mouth. So I'm thinking that when you sneeze, your butt clenches tight, and so you're not able to fart. The other thing is the force, the volume. So when you sneeze, it's quick, it's immediate, it's out there in an instant. If you fart it with the same velocity that you sneezed, then yes, you can create a vacuum.
Rocket ship.
But your farts are usually a slower, drawn-out thing, so you have time for your body to replenish that refill that air that it's losing in the middle of a fart. My belly button doesn't have a pressure relief valve in it.
Mine does. I'll just pull it right now.
Although, I think if you were to fart at the same velocity that you were to sneeze, yes, you could create a vacuum inside. But it would have to be volume. You have to sneeze, because your sneezes are short bursts usually. It'd have to be a pretty large volume of air leaving through the sneeze and through the fart to create a vacuum.
How fast do you think sneezes are? Would they be legal in a school zone?
No. You sneeze faster than that.
So you're not allowed to sneeze in a school zone?
Well, you can sneeze because you're not moving. It's your snot and spit is moving at faster than 25.
I couldn't imagine being a police officer just having to arrest your snot for going faster in a school zone. That'd suck.
I don't think speed limits apply to bodily fluids.
Of course they do. Why wouldn't they?
I don't think I have to answer that, do I?
Well, okay. You could also consider that if you did create a vacuum, glass would shatter everywhere like the rest of the vacuums, you know? I'm kidding, not glass. But you would essentially... Would you implode or explode?
If you had a vacuum, you would implode. You can't... If there's a vacuum, you can't explode with a vacuum because there's nothing pushing out.
Would you implode, then explode?
It would almost be like a black hole. You would implode... And then it would refill. I don't know if you would explode after you imploded.
Because, boom, plow.
I don't know if there's not enough, the stomach's not large enough to create an implosion. It would just kind of, your gut and all would kind of cave in.
You would die.
I don't think you'd die.
If there's a vacuum in your stomach would collapse in. And what would be there to refill it?
A split second, then you take air. But just like if you collapsed a lung, it can then refill right back afterwards. It's done. I had it happen to mine before.
Okay.
So I think the stomach would create the vacuum, suck in, but it wouldn't just be the stomach. It has to be your intestines, your esophagus, that whole, yeah, you know, that whole digestive system.
So I couldn't imagine being all a darn, my stomach had a vacuum again.
Actually, I take that back now I'm talking about this, because when you sneeze, the sneeze comes from your lungs, right?
Yeah.
That's not your digestive system. So you could not create a vacuum because you're sneezing out of...
Technically, the sneeze is the air from the nasal passages going through the nasal passages or your mouth, and just essentially getting things from your sinuses out, not anywhere in your stomach
but
or lungs.
But that air, the air that forces out comes from your lungs.
Yes.
And when you fart, the air comes from your digestive system, which is two different parts of the body. They're not connected.
It's just releasing pressure.
There's that flap in your throat that blocks those two off. So when you're sneezing, you're not drawing air out of the stomach, so therefore there would not be a vacuum there, no matter what. You would
then
not.
What's the belly button for?
Do I have to tell you that, really?
I thought it was to release pressure, so you didn't create a vacuum in your stomach.
That's when you go back to how much is too much. You know that chocolate? That's a pressure release that'll keep your stomach from exploding.
Oh, there is no too much chocolate though.
Well, there is. If your stomach is exploding, you've had too much chocolate.
Nah.
All right. Well, that is all for today. So, if you have a question that needs an answer, one that we haven't covered yet, please send it to us. Aaron and I will be more than happy to answer that for you, either responding directly back to you or in a future episode. You can reach us at theapplesaucepod@gmail.com.
Theapplesaucepod@gmail.com.
Or facebook.com/theapplesaucepod. We'd like to thank you again for downloading and listening to the Applesauce Podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Aaron.
And we're out of here.
Bye.